Good day, everyone, everywhere, and special greetings to all those seated in heavenly places in Yahshua, our Messiah. The name of this program is Cross the Border, and I'm Nicholas. Today, we're going to continue our study in the Acts of the Apostles. And last time, we left off at chapter 23, but I'm going to backtrack a little bit because it's been a few days, a weekend. And that way we can pick up and get the feel of the situation we're in here with our good friend Paul. He was bound with thongs. You remember they took him to the jail. The police came and got him because they were going to kill him. And they took him into protective custody. And they were going to bound him with thongs so that they could scourge him. And then Paul says to the centurion that's standing by, "Is it lawful for you to scourge a man that is a Roman?" And when the captain, the guard, heard that, he went and he said, "Tell me, are you a Roman?" And he said, "Yes." And they had a conversation. So anyway, on the morrow, because he would have known the certainty wherefore he was accused of the Jews, he loosed him from his bands and commanded the chief priests and all their council to appear. And brought Paul down and set them before him. So here's the scene. We have Paul speaking to the priests and making his case here. And so in chapter 23, verse 1, Paul stands up, and earnestly beholding the council, he says, "Men and brethren, I have lived in all good conscience before God unto this day. And the high priest Ananias commanded them that stood by to smite him on the mouth." And I guess whatever he just said kind of made the Ananias angry, perhaps. But anyway, so they smite Paul on the mouth. And then Paul, "Unto him, God shall smite thee, thou whited wall. For sittest thou a judge after the law, and commandest me to be smitten contrary to the law." So Paul uses the law against him. And they that stood by said, "Revilest thou the God's high priest?" And Paul said, "I wist not, brethren, that he was a high priest. For it is written, thou shalt not speak evil of the ruler of thy people." So obviously Paul didn't know who said to strike him, but he just heard that someone said it. And, of course, he was stricken, and, of course, against the law, without a cause. But when Paul perceived that one part were Sadducees and the other Pharisees, he cried out in the council, "Men and brethren, I am a Pharisee, the son of a Pharisee. Of the hope and resurrection of the dead, I am called in question." Paul uses that old divide and conquer tactic. He's going to divide and conquer the priests by the question of the resurrection. And when he had said this, there arose a dissension between the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and the multitude was divided. For the Sadducees say that there is no resurrection, neither angel nor spirit, but the Pharisees confess both. And there arose a great cry, and the scribes that were of the Pharisees' part arose and strove, saying, "We find no evil in this man. But if a spirit or an angel has spoken to him, let us not fight against God." And then there arose a great dissension. The chief captain, fearing lest Paul should have been pulled in pieces of them, commanded soldiers to go down and to take him by force from among them and to bring him into the castle, and that would be the jail. That's 16th century for jail. King James Version, they put the word castle in there. And the knight, I'm not sure they had many castles in the first century. Yeah. Anyway, you see that influence there. And chapter 23, verse 11, "And the night following, the Lord stood by him and said, Be of good cheer, Paul, for as thou hast testified of me in Jerusalem, so must thou bear witness also at Rome. And when it was day, certain of the Jews banded together and bound themselves under curse, saying that they would neither eat nor drink till they had killed Paul. And there were more than 40 which had made this conspiracy. And they came to the chief priests and the elders and said, "We have bound ourselves under a great curse, and we will eat nothing until we have slain Paul." And that's kind of a dumb thing, because if your way becomes rigorous, you don't want to be faint for lack of food. So that's just my own comment there. That's kind of a dumb curse to take. You know, we aren't going to eat or drink until we've accomplished our task. Well, I hope the task is not too rigorous. "But we have bound ourselves," they said. "We will eat nothing till we have slain Paul." I wonder if they starved to death. I doubt it. I'll bet you every one of them broke their vow, because they didn't slay Paul. "Now, therefore, ye, with the council, signify to the chief captain that he bring him down to you tomorrow, as though you would inquire something more perfectly concerning him. And we, or ever he come near, we are ready to kill him." So, adding more to the conspiracy. "And when Paul's sister's son heard of their lying in wait, he went and entered into the castle and told Paul." And Paul, see now Paul was under protective custody. So that means that he could have visitors and such, but they were keeping him there for his own protection, basically, and to keep him from starting, for the public peace too. I mean, this was Roman law, wasn't it? Kind of the same kind of law we have in operation here today where I live, the same principles of law. And so they were keeping the peace, the civil peace, by keeping Paul locked up. So Paul called one of the centurions unto him and said, "Bring this young man unto the chief captain, for he has a certain thing to tell him." So he took him and brought him to the chief captain and said, "Paul the prisoner called me unto him and prayed me to bring this young man unto thee, who has something to say unto thee." And the chief captain took him by the hand and went with him aside privately and asked him what it was that he had to tell. And he said, "The Jews," and of course he's speaking of the chief priests and the scribes and the Pharisees, "have agreed to desire thee that thou wouldest bring down Paul tomorrow into the council, as though they would inquire somewhat of him more perfectly. But do not thou yield unto them, for there lie in wait for him of them more than 40 men, which have bound themselves with an oath that they will neither eat nor drink till they have killed him, and now are ready looking for a promise from thee. So the chief captain therefore let the young man depart, and charged him, see thou tell no man that thou hast showed these things to me." And so the conspiracy is exposed. "And he called unto him 2 centurions, saying, Make ready 200 soldiers to go to Caesarea, and horsemen 70. While Paul is getting an escort, and a very important man. This is a very, very important mission that they're undertaking here, and sparing no expense. I mean, you know, 70 horsemen, 30 horsemen, and spearmen 200, and so we got 200 soldiers, 200 spearmen, and 30 horsemen, and it was the third hour of the night. And they provided them beasts that they may set Paul on and bring him safe unto Felix the governor. And he wrote a letter after this manner: Claudius Lysias unto the most excellent governor Felix sendeth greeting. This man was taken of the Jews and should have been killed of them. Then came I with an army and rescued him, and having understood that he was a Roman. And when I would have known the cause whereof they accused him, I brought him forth unto their council, whom I perceived to be accused of a question of their law, but to have nothing laid to his charge worthy of death or of bonds. And when he told me how that the Jews laid wait for the man, I said straightway to thee, and gave commandment to his accusers also to say before thee what they had against him. Farewell. So he sends Paul, and then he tells the accusers, if you want to go confront this man, you want to bring your accusations against him, you're going to go see Felix, the governor there in Caesarea. So the soldiers, as it was commanded them, took Paul and brought him by night to Antipatris. On the morrow they left the horsemen to go with him and returned to the castle. And when they came to Caesarea and delivered the epistle to the governor, presented Paul also before him. And when the governor had read the letter, he asked of what province he was. And when he understood that he was of Cilicia, "I will hear thee," he said, "when thine accusers are also come." And he commanded him to be kept in Herod's judgment hall. And after 5 days, Ananias the high priest descended with the elders, with a certain orator named Tertullus, who informed the governor against Paul. So I'm guessing that this Tertullus guy was like a lawyer or an attorney who is going to speak. That's the position that he has, because he's an orator, and he's going to present the case against Paul. And when he was called forth, Tertullus began to accuse him, saying, "Seeing," perhaps like a prosecuting attorney, perhaps, "seeing that thee, by thee we enjoy great quietness, and that very worthy deeds are done unto this nation by thy providence, we accept always and in all places the most noble feelings, with all thankfulness." Yeah, you can see this guy's an orator. He starts by kissing up. "Notwithstanding that I be not further tedious unto thee, I pray thee that thou wouldest hear us of thy clemency a few words. For we have found this man a pestilent fellow, and a mover of sedition among all the Jews throughout the world, and a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes, who also hath gone about to profane the temple, whom we took and would have judged according to our law. But the chief captain, Lysias, came upon us, and with great violence took him away out of our hands, commanding his accusers to come unto thee, by examining of whom thyself mayest take knowledge of all these things whereof we accuse him. And the Jews also assented, saying that these things were so. And Paul, after that the governor had beckoned him to speak, answered, "Forasmuch as I know that thou hast been of the many years a judge unto this nation, I do more cheerfully answer for myself, because that thou mayest understand that there are yet but 12 days since I went up to Jerusalem for to worship. And they neither found me in the temple disputing with any man, neither raising up the people, neither in the synagogues nor in the city, neither can they prove the things whereof they now accuse me. But this I confess unto thee, that after the way that which they call heresy, the Nazarenes, so worship I the God of my fathers, believing all things which are written in the law and in the prophets, and have hope toward God, which they themselves also allow, that there shall be a resurrection of the dead, both of the just and the unjust. And herein do I exercise myself, to have always a conscience void of offense toward God and toward men. Now after many years I came to bring alms to my nation and offerings, whereupon certain Jews from Asia found me purified in the temple, neither with multitude nor with tumult, who ought to have been here before thee and object if they had aught against me. Or else let these same here say if they found any evil doing in me while I stood before the council. Except it be for this one voice that I cried standing among them, touching the resurrection of the dead, I am called in question by you this day." And when Felix heard these things, having more perfect knowledge of that way, he deferred them and said, "When Lysias, the chief captain, shall come down, I will know the utmost of your matter." And he commanded a centurion to keep Paul and to let him have liberty. So basically, Paul is going to be under a protective custody type house arrest. And they're going to wait for the chief captain to come down and give his testimony of the situation. So he commanded the centurion to keep Paul, to let him have liberty, and that he should forbid none of his acquaintances to minister or to come unto him. And after certain days, when Felix came with his wife Drusilla, which was a Jewess, he sent for Paul and heard him concerning the faith in Christ. And as he reasoned of righteousness, temperance, and judgment to come, Felix trembled and answered, "Go thy way for this time. When I have a convenient season, I will call for you." And he hoped also that money should have been given him of Paul, that he might loose him, wherefore he was kind of hoping for a payoff from Paul when he came in, but he started to tremble when he heard the things that Paul had to say, of course, because he was married to his wife, who was a Jew, and so having some understanding of the faith of Israel, but really seeing no other practice but the practice of the scribes, the Pharisees, and the hypocrites, him being a ruler and having more to do with the pomp and the scribes, the Pharisees, the ones who like to be seen of men and enjoy their power. So hearing what he heard from Paul, he started to tremble. It says here, Felix trembled and said, "Go thy way for this time. When I have a more convenient season, when I have more time, I'll call for you." Because, of course, he was a governor and a very busy position, if you could imagine, a governor and a judge also, because many of the governors sat as judges too, as Felix did. And he hoped also, and like I said here, he hoped that Paul would have a payoff for him in chapter 24 and verse 26. Wherefore he sent for him more the often and communed with him. But after 2 years, Porcius Festus came into Felix's room, and Felix, willing to show the Jews a pleasure, left Paul bound. And we'll pick up here when we get back from this short break. You're listening to Cross the Border. Don't go anywhere.